Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com.
Tennessee sounds perfect.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in. Who's that knocking on your door, trick-or-treating? Why, it's us with our super producer, Mr. Max Williams.
Who's that girl? La, la, la. It's Max Williams. Who's that girl?
Max Two Hands Williams?
I haven't had any hands now.
Yeah, you got it.
Oh, that's right. I forgot you were a hand down.
I got cleared by the orthopedic surgeon yesterday to begin weightlifting again.
All right.
That's Noel
Get
Brown.
Get back to your swole state.
That's Noel Brown. I'm Ben Bolin. Sad news for you, Max. You're also our research associate on this episode. That's not the sad news. The sad news is I went through a phase where I wrote nicknames for all our coworkers, and Matt Two Hands Frederick.
Oh, I know that one already.
You know that one. Yeah.
But I mean, since he's my work big brother, so I think we can share, like, you know, nicknames.
All right. That's how nicknames work. It gets a little confusing.
Yeah.
We might have to workshop this one, Max.
Well, let's workshop candy, because cast your memories back, fellow Ridiculous Historians. We are a very pro-Halloween bunch, and we had a lot of opinions about Halloween candy in a previous episode. And I don't know whether we'll play a clip or not, but in classic Ridiculous History fashion, far after that conversation during Halloween, we are returning to you with some opinions about candy. Now, to be fair, we are a history show, so we will explore history of candy, but we just want you to know going into this, we got a lot of hot takes.
Nostalgia candy. The nostalgia candy scene is rife with garbage candy. Although there's a few gems, you know, hidden within the rough, right? Isn't that how it goes?
Diamond in the rough.
Yeah.
Did I tell you guys that? So we started writing this brief back last year, and around that time, I bought my dad an entire. This is the only way you can buy Necco wafers now. Like a case of Necco wafers.
Yeah,
both the chocolate, the selection, and a shirt. It was like $100. He loved it. He's beyond like happy about it. But it's like, man. I would have the father who is a passionate defender of Necco wafers and grape nuts.
Necco wafers to me just strike me as like wartime candy. You know?
Like they're like they look like rations. Hardtack.
Yeah, exactly.
They're Halloween hardtack. Yes.
And I just want to point out that we are going to talk about a candy today that was both a Depression era and a wartime rationing candy.
Like yeah.
It's literally
yeah.
in their history. So
it's true.
Yeah.
And that's why they stick around. It also reminds me, for our friends further south, it reminds me of the Anzac cookies, the Australian biscuits, ANZAC. Those,
chip a tooth on those, huh?
Yeah, those are a result of wartime stuff. You know, it's the thing. It's the thing about candy. There is such a panoply of possibility. Generally, even people who don't consider themselves as folks with a sweet tooth, they'll have one candy. And to your point, Noel, it's often nostalgia related, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, I ate Whoppers the first time I saw a movie that I loved. So I don't eat candy, but I do have an exception for Whoppers. I suggest we begin with Tootsie Rolls. As our pal Max introduces it, here's the question. Have you ever looked at your cat's turds and thought, what if that was chewier?
Well, oh, wow. But I do have to take issue with something that Max wrote in his intro here that we sort of breezed past. You think Kit Kat, Reese's, and Almond Joy are bad candy?
No. I'm saying if you order, you buy the variety pack.
You
get the Kit Kats, you get the Reese's, which are A-plus candies, and you get an Almond Joy, which is just trash candy.
No, that's what I'm saying. That's my favorite candy.
Are you serious?
I love Almond Joy.
Did you read the next sentence that said you are one of the seven people who are getting mad about this?
Anyway.
Well, I'm mad. And I also like Reese's is considered a beloved candy. I don't know what you're talking about.
But shout out to Shang Wang, who has an excellent piece about almonds versus mounds. What's your Almond Joy versus mounds? What's your mounds opinion, Noel?
Well, Almond Joys have nuts and mounds don't.
Right.
So sometimes you feel like, usually I feel like a nut. When I don't, I eat some other candy that's not mounds. Mounds is darker chocolate too. I don't know, man. People have really strong opinions about shredded coconut. And I don't know if you know this, you know, there's some surgeries that people get. I forget the name of it, but it's when you get your stomach reduced in size. Some people that have trouble with weight gain, and it's a procedure that can be done to literally decrease the size of your stomach. And there's some kind of suture or staples or whatever that stay in there forever that shredded coconut can literally shred. So people that have these procedures, they're no longer allowed to eat shredded coconut of any variety for the rest of their lives, which it sounds like you guys would be fine with.
Gastric stapling surgery.
That's the one.
Yeah. Clearly, as we're going into it, there is one candy, which is obviously the worst candy bar, and that is the Zero Bar. We're not going to talk about the Zero Bar because that would be like platforming terrorism. We just need you to know that we are aware of that war crime on the mouth.
Man, such strong opinions about. I haven't had one in years. I think, what is it? It's basically nougat wrapped in white chocolate. Are there some almonds in there? There's some kind of crunchy nut.
Caramel, peanut, and almond nougat covered with white fudge.
Which is weird because just like an improvised explosive device, those ingredients on their own are harmless. You know,
when weaponized in the form of a
weaponized.
And the question then arises, too. I mean, if some of these candies are so hated, why are they still manufactured? Right. You can still the Zero Bar is right there on the candy aisle at your local convenience store or gas station right next to the hits.
It's been around for 104 years.
Well, thankfully, with dust on them. That's how you'll see them on the shelf. And that's, I think, a good thing for America. But we're not talking about the Zero. We don't want to platform that terrible stuff. There's a lot of good candy out there. Opinions differ on the candy known as the Tootsie Roll.
Hate them.
This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Noel, do you remember your favorite car?
Well, yeah, it was an Eddie Bauer edition Ford Explorer.
Oh, that's
and
cool,
I just remember, it was my dad's. I was a hand-me-down car kind of kid. Dad would buy a new car, I'd get that car. And I just remember feeling so awesome being up above everybody, like I was in Mad Max or something, you know?
I had a lot of land yachts that I loved. I had Pontiac Bonnevilles.
Right.
Oh, I never had an El Camino. My dad had one. And that was a real interesting use of our collective time, keeping that thing running. But I think these cars all kind of speak to us because they were such a fundamental part of our lives. Do you remember when I had that Monte Carlo?
That's what I meant. I said El Camino and I meant Monte Carlo.
I miss it. So the Monte Carlo
was tough. I had a series of Monte Carlos, and the last one, God bless it, I had to learn a lot about car maintenance just to keep that guy running.
Totally. But
it still was like a perfect fit. It's almost like finding your true love. You know, like when you recently got a car a few years back now.
Oh, man. And funny you should say that. That particular perfect fit was the Honda Fit, which I love dearly. But, Ben, it's getting a little long in the tooth. And while it's been incredibly reliable up to now, it's getting to that age where I might have to start looking for some parts here and there to keep it running.
Mm-hmm. And that's where eBay Motors comes in. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly.
Brake kits, LED headlights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back.
Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash.
So keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com.
Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, Noel, have you ever wanted to wake up to something better?
Oh, boy, have I ever, Ben.
Well, this is where Avalon Waterways comes in. How does waking up to a medieval castle, an ancient cathedral, a rolling vineyard, or a charming cobblestone village sound to you?
Well, here on Ridiculous History, that's right up our street, Ben, our charming cobblestone street. So I can say it sounds pretty good to me.
You're absolutely right, Noel. Avalon Waterways has redefined cruising in so many different ways. They've got the widest opening windows. They've got beds that face the passing scenery. So wherever you go, you have a front row seat to the views of the world. And not only do you wake up in the best staterooms in the entirety of the business, but you're waking up in a new port every day, right in the heart of these amazing historic cities.
Ah, Ben, sign me up. Open your eyes to a better view and a different kind of cruising. One with smaller ships, bigger experiences, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
You're not a Tootsie Boy?
Oh, no. No, my girlfriend really likes them a lot, but I don't like the texture of them. I don't like the way they get stuck in your teeth.
Yeah.
They do resemble cat turds. There's no question about that. I just find them patently unpleasant.
So let's go to Kat Eschner, writing for Smithsonian, who gives us a bit of the history here. On the 23rd of February, 1896, Leo Hirschfeld opened a shop in New York City. He's originally an Austrian national. And I got to pause here because I know this story from a thing called Stuff of Genius that we did many years ago, a video series on YouTube. Yeah. All right. So here's the idea. He is working, our buddy Leo, in this shop, and he invents the Tootsie Roll for one reason or another. And then it becomes very popular. It's like, it's got a wax-like texture. Some people like it. Some people don't. It's not quite gum. It's definitely not, you know, like a Hershey Kiss or something. But at this point, New York goes crazy for it. They want the little Tootsie Roll snacks. And I think the first flavor was only chocolate. Is that correct?
I believe, yeah, that's certainly the classic Tootsie Roll. And they have, there are fruit adjacent flavored Tootsie Rolls. There's the one that resemble like kind of what E.T. looked like at the end of the movie when he sort of shriveled up and turned white and kind of looked like a cat turd that had been left out for quite a few days and dried out. There's definitely those as well. What other varietals of Tootsie Rolls are out there?
Vanilla.
Okay, yeah.
There are a couple of, I want to say for a short time, they had the potential to become like Kit Kats in Japan. Every time I have to go to Japan, I pick up a ton of Kit Kats because they're in. Kit Kat flavors in Japan are amazing because they are very much not one-to-one palate comparisons. You can get Kit Kats that are ocean wave flavored. Or like,
what does that taste like?
They're very Miyazaki, you know. Uh-huh. Like, I'm sure there's a Kit Kat out there named "A Dream I Had" or something like that. But with our boy Hirschfeld, after he invents the Tootsie Roll, he merges with an outfit called Stern and Solberg to get scale of economy to make more Tootsie Rolls and to bring them to more places. There's a side note here involving Star Wars.
Right. There's an advertisement for something called The Empire Strips Back, which I believe is a Star Wars themed burlesque show that just recently passed through Atlanta. I believe a friend of the show, Nick Benson, Nick Admiral Turbo Benson, went and said it was quite a hullabaloo, featuring stormtroopers, something called Twi'lex. I'm not familiar with this Star Wars creature, Boba Fett. You think they would have given them more risque names? The image associated with the ad featured a very sexy Jabba the Hutt being quite risque.
Yeah. Well,
what has this to do with the episode, you might ask?
Yeah, nothing. It has nothing to do with it other than us sharing the specific types of targeted ads our pal Max is getting.
I bet the Star Wars universe has bad candy made from that blue milk, perhaps.
Well, the Tootsie Roll, everybody in the West recognizes it. When it started, it solved two problems. It didn't melt and it was individually wrapped. And this was a huge, huge deal because if you are a Wonka-esque or Charlie in the Chocolate Factory-esque Candyman, shout out to the Candyman can, you would try to sell a lot of candy and a lot of your candy was very temperature sensitive. So a hot summer when most people are going to be out, perhaps impulsively buying candy, a hot summer can be dangerous for things like marshmallows, which are also trash. So chocolate also has a problem just chemically in very hot weather. It can turn into a sticky mass. The texture can change. So Samira Kawash, who also authored A History of Candy, puts it this way. The genius of Tootsie Roll was to create a summer candy that was a flavor never before seen in summer candies, the flavor of chocolate, because you just couldn't get it at that time.
Yeah, I guess it's sort of chocolate the way like Diet Coke tastes like Coke. I mean, it doesn't taste like diety. It's definitely sweet, but it's, I don't know. I wouldn't describe it as being particularly accurate in its chocolate flavor.
A third advantage is that it was really affordable, right? This is kind of like penny candy.
That's right. And then enter. Let's combine two things that people apparently love at the time, which is this Tootsie Roll and a lollipop. Boom, bang, bam. You got yourself a Tootsie Pop. How many licks does it take to get to the center? The world may never know. Ask Mr. Owl. You guys remember that classic ad? They played it well into the 90s. Just the same one, which I really respect. Because again, they're playing on the nostalgia of it. They know their brand.
Yeah. How many licks does it take to get to the center of a Tootsie Pop? A question that I think there was actually one or two scientific endeavors to find the answer, which we're not going to quote today, but let us know how many licks it takes you. this is where the war comes in that Max teased so astutely. So the Tootsie Pop comes along in the 1930s. It is a it's one of the candies that succeeds during the Great Depression. And when the U.S. goes to World War II, the Tootsie Roll goes along as well. I want to shout out our earlier episode on chocolate science in war, which was pretty much a banger. So the Tootsie Roll is associated with wartime rationing and the Depression in some form. And after the war, now, as veterans are returning to the U.S., it becomes even more popular because now it is hitting that nostalgia switch.
Have you guys seen the Japanese anime film Grave of the Fireflies?
Yes.
It's a very harrowing tale, as you guys know. Anyone out there in the audience who hasn't seen it, a very harrowing World War II tale told from the perspective of a young boy and his sister who are kind of traversing the, you know, nuclear decimated wasteland of Japan. And there is a candy tie-in. It's like basically a ration type candy. They're called Sakuma Drops. And it's a really tragic thing where they end up, you know, starving and all they have are these little kind of hard candy drops. And you can still buy these if you go to a grocery store, like a Japanese or Asian market. And they're branded with Grave of the Fireflies imagery, which I think is the weirdest branding tie-in because it is a plot point in the movie that will break your heart. And it comes in this like tin, you know, and I actually have one that I just keep on my mantle as like a little curio or whatever. But I just thought that was such an odd choice to tie in such a depressing film to your brand.
Nostalgia is a heck of a drug.
Yeah. Yes, that's true.
And right now, again, according to that awesome article, Tootsie Rolls were WW2 energy bars from Kat Eschner. According to that article, which is pretty recent from 2017, right now, 13.8% of Americans hate Tootsie Rolls, or I should say they did in 2017. So is the candy still popular? I would say yes.
Ben, weren't there at the time, maybe I'm misremembering, but like some of those ration kind of MRE situations, didn't they sometimes include a little Tootsie Roll?
Yeah, because they stayed fresh.
They stayed fresh and they're calorically dense. Like we were talking on our other show, Stuff They Don't Want You to Know About, or maybe it wasn't on the show, but it was a conversation we were having with our co-host Matt, that in a apocalyptic or, you know, what's the word, kind of bunker type situation, peanut butter is really great to have because of its caloric density. So same deal with this stuff. And it also keeps, packs a lot of punch calorically into a little tiny wax paper package.
Yeah, and if you go on the Tootsie Roll website today, according to Mashed.com, you will find that there are 64 million tiny little Tootsie Rolls produced every single day. They also walk through some pretty interesting statistics.
Right, so let's break down the math. The company produces 64 million candies a day, which averages to 44,440 every minute, 740 every second. Kind of mind-boggling. I'd love to see how it's made about the Tootsie Roll process because, like, you know, just how do they get each one wrapped so perfectly? They must have a machine that twists the ends like that. I'd love to see that assembly line in action. Massive scale. Can only imagine.
Yeah. 740 separate, individually wrapped Tootsie Rolls every second. Or I guess it takes them longer to wrap them.
It must. Ben, do you think, and I guess, you know what I bet? I bet they're created as giant logs that are then cut, chopped, you know, like by some massive machine, like all at the same time. But do you think that it's Tootsie Rolls that are kind of responsible for the individually packaged candy craze? Because there are some individually packaged candies that are so small, like egregious, you know, like gummies you can find now that each little tiny gummy has its own little plastic packaging.
You know, I would kind of like to do an episode about packaging. Mm-hmm. It's just such a, it's a fascinating thing. It may be its own podcast.
Sure.
But Tootsie Rolls, at least in the West, were pretty early into the individually packaged concept, you know, and now there's what, a estimated 23 billion Tootsie Rolls made a year, individually packaged. It's pretty wild. And you know, interesting news for the slightly less than 14% of Americans who don't care for Tootsie Rolls. Other people like them. They're very positive about it. I'm one of those people. And, you know, if I don't know, man, candy is so weird. Like we have.
Guys, can I admit something?
Yeah.
I actually like Tootsie Rolls, even though I put them here. First one on the write up.
I like them. It's nostalgia, though, because, you know, if you grow up in like a public school environment, Tootsie Rolls often end up being something you get on like Valentine's Day. Teachers give them as treats and so on.
I really like Bitto Honey, which has a very similar texture to Tootsie Rolls, but a lovely honey nut kind of flavor. So to me, it's not the texture of the Tootsie Rolls that throws me off. It's just the kind of faux chocolate flavor of it. But love a Bitto Honey. Also, there's another, what was it called? Like something Jane? Mary Jane's. That's another like nostalgia candy that's very similar to Bitto Honey.
There was one I still remember. It was like... it's going to come back to me at the weirdest moment. It's not a Butterfinger, but it was like it came on a stick and it was like a little chocolatey, caramelly turd. And it was,
yeah, I know what you're talking about. It was something daddy, sugar daddy.
Sugar daddy.
Because then there's sugar babies, and that was related, but the right. Sugar daddy comes on a stick.
What's your opinion on candy corn, you guys?
Oh, God, I hope we're aligned on this. I just think it's the devil's candy.
This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Noel, do you remember your favorite car?
Well, yeah. It was an Eddie Bauer edition Ford Explorer.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
I just remember it was my dad's. I was a hand-me-down car kind of kid. Dad would buy a new car. I'd get that car. And I just remember feeling so awesome being up above everybody. Like I was in Mad Max or something, you know?
I had a lot of land yachts that I loved. I had Pontiac Bonnevilles.
Right.
Oh, I never had an El Camino. My dad had one. And that was a real interesting use of our collective time, keeping that thing running. But I think these cars all kind of speak to us because they were such a fundamental part of our lives. Do you remember when I had that Monte Carlo?
That's what I meant. I said El Camino and I meant Monte Carlo.
I miss it. So the Monte Carlo was tough. I had a series of Monte Carlos, and the last one, God bless it, I had to learn a lot about car maintenance just to keep that guy running.
Totally. But
it still was like a perfect fit. It's almost like finding your true love. You know, like when you recently got a car a few years back now.
Oh, man. And funny you should say that. That particular perfect fit was the Honda Fit, which I love dearly. But, Ben, it's getting a little long in the tooth. And while it's been incredibly reliable up to now, it's getting to that age where I might have to start looking for some parts here and there to keep it running.
Mm-hmm. And that's where eBay Motors comes in. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly.
Brake kits, LED headlights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back.
Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash.
So keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com.
Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, Noel, have you ever wanted to wake up to something better?
Oh, boy, have I ever, Ben.
Well, this is where Avalon Waterways comes in. How does waking up to a medieval castle, an ancient cathedral, a rolling vineyard, or a charming cobblestone village sound to you?
Well, here on Ridiculous History, that's right up our street, Ben, our charming cobblestone street. So I can say it sounds pretty good to me.
You're absolutely right, Noel. Avalon Waterways has redefined cruising in so many different ways. They've got the widest opening windows. They've got beds that face the passing scenery. So wherever you go, you have a front row seat to the views of the world. And not only do you wake up in the best staterooms in the entirety of the business, but you're waking up in a new port every day, right in the heart of these amazing historic cities.
Ah, Ben, sign me up. Open your eyes to a better view and a different kind of cruising. One with smaller ships, bigger experiences, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
You're probably familiar with candy corn, folks. It's the thing that looks like little loose teeth. Yes. Made of sugar.
Exactly. Little loose vampire fangs, kind of with the orange and red and white. Maybe not red, but there's three colors. Maybe it just goes orange, white, orange, but definitely got a repeating pattern. And of course, a fun way to make variations because there are some festive looking candy corns. I put them in the same category as those weird little pumpkin things. They just taste like sugary wax to me and just get stuck in your teeth once again. I think they're cute for decoration, though, you know, to fill out perhaps a bit of a Halloween cornucopia spread or, to the point made here in the research document, a Thanksgiving cornucopia spread of candy. Although we don't really associate Thanksgiving with candy as much as we do with like gluttony and pies.
Mm. And it's actually, it's tough to find the provenance or the ultimate origin story of candy corn. But from what we know, it came around sometime in the 1870s, 1880s. The technology to make this kind of stuff, I would argue, was already sort of descending from things like marzipan. Right, where you use an almond paste to create different shapes. Companies at this time were all about taking conventional, easily accessible agricultural products and using them as a flavor, I wouldn't even say a flavor base, a flavor inspiration for different things they would shape. Like chestnut candy is still pretty popular in different parts of the world.
I've never had chestnut candy. Huh.
Yeah.
You know what? Maybe I have seen, we were talking earlier, Ben, about the various varieties of Japanese Kit Kat. I want to say I've seen a chestnut flavored Kit Kat, you know, at Super H Mart before, but I could be wrong.
You probably have. Mm-hmm. You've probably seen it. Yeah. Chestnut flavor for different things is pretty popular in East Asia.
Got it. And I got to say, just putting it out there, I'm a big marzipan fan. But for me, that's its own kind of nostalgia because as you all know, I was once a small German boy. And marzipan is huge in Germany. There was a candy that my parents would give me for Christmas in my stocking every year called Mozartkugeln. And they're chocolatey encased balls of marzipan with kind of like a liquor-y kind of chocolate filling. I guess they cook it off, but I remember them tasting quite boozy, but it was sort of a tradition that I would get Mozartkugeln in my stocking every year.
Hmm. And Becky Little, writing for history.com with the article, Who Invented Candy Corn?, dives into this strange, somewhat obscure origin story. She posits that a guy named George Reniger worked at a place called the Wunderlei Candy Company, and he is generally going to be cited as the creator of candy corn because while he was working at this company, Wunderlei became the first outfit to sell this stuff. And just to be clear, everybody, candy corn is mainly sugar and corn syrup. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
You know, it's interesting. I was just looking. Yes, I was just looking to go back a little further, wondering, like, what was the first documented sweet? And it actually resembles a lot of the kinds of candies we're talking about today. It was, of course, the ancient Egyptians, as well as folks in the Middle East and in China, where they combined fruits and nuts, often caramelizing them inside honey. They also created early versions of licorice and kind of ginger candies. But we do see things that are very, that kind of almost preserved, you know, chunky stuff within a kind of, medium of sort of honeyed kind of gooiness. So not like candy corn, a little more like the Bitto honey and the Tootsie Rolls that we're talking about, or even things like fruitcake. But I digress. I just wanted to quickly just take us into the past.
However, it was the Golitz Candy Company, now going by the name Jelly Belly Candy Company. They made candy corn successful. They hit the economy of scale. In 1898, they snagged the recipe and they started selling these little, you know, sugar and corn syrup burst of sweet as a candy that they originally called chicken feed. But it makes sense at the time because many more people were part of the agricultural industry. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like how you will sell pretend kitchen goods to children, you know, your Oshkosh Bagosh toaster oven and so on.
Easy Bake Oven and all that.
Right.
So fast forward a little bit to the early 1900s when candy corn really took off, because much like the humble Tootsie Roll, it was very, very cheap to buy and to produce, and was another member of the family we know as penny candy. And I don't know if y'all remember, I'm sure you do, the idea of a penny lick when we did a history of ice cream or frozen treats, that you would like. It would be a kind of a community spoon. You'd pay a penny and you'd get a lick of the spoon, or it was like a shared popsicle or something. It was that, and I believe it actually spread disease pretty significantly back in the heyday of the penny lick.
Yeah, it was a glass. People only had like a couple glasses, so after you were done licking all the ice cream out of it, dunked it in water and put, you know, more ice cream, gave it to somebody else.
Similar to how lemonade or dairy would be served from a cup that was reused. There were definitely vectors for infection. There was a thing that happened that was very good for candy corn, and it was the evolution of Halloween, the way it's currently celebrated in the United States. As candy becomes increasingly associated with Halloween in the 1950s, candy corn, I would argue also Tootsie Rolls, increasingly become a convenient giveaway candy for Halloween. But it may be a chicken feed versus the egg kind of thing.
Yes. Like a robin egg. That's sort of like just a multicolored whopper, really. It doesn't have chocolate on the outside. It's more of a thin candy shell. But yeah, according to Samara Kawash in her book on the history of candy, there's a quote here. There was a dramatic spike in October advertising of candy corn starting in the late 1950s, which began to really cement the candy as being associated with Halloween. I don't know. I guess it makes sense because of fall kind of stuff. And like corn mazes and, you know, scarecrows and all of that. So I guess it was a convenient tie-in, even if it wasn't necessarily envisioned that way in the first place, right?
For sure, yeah. There's something autumnal about it. That's always been an association with candy corn. And staying with Little here for a moment, Little notes the National Confectioners Association estimates more than 35 million pounds of this candy corn, are sold every year. The sales do seem to be pretty seasonal. It's most popular in October, but you can also get candy corn any old time of the year, even on February 29th, even on, what was that month that got put in and taken out? Mercedes?
Oh, geez.
Mercedonius.
Right. Even on Mercedonius, if they bring Mercedonius back, you can get candy corn.
That's right. And it's still sold in bulk, you know, in giant bulky bags. Max found a fun little article from Pinterest on the proper way to eat candy corn. It starts with open bag, pour candy into trash, eat a Reese's peanut butter cup. And I couldn't agree more. And, you know, and to your point, Ben, about how this stuff is still around, there is even a special day designated for those who love candy corn. It is October 30th, National Candy Corn Day. Seems like there's a national day for just about everything.
Yeah, but not Almond Joys. Hold the phone or hold the Halloween bag.
Holding.
This turned into a two-parter because it turns out, as we said at the top, Noel, Max, we have a lot of opinions about candy.
It does seem to get people's danders up. Yeah, people have hot takes on candy. We are right there with you. So join us for part two coming up this very week.
Big, big thanks to super producer and research associate, Mr. Max Williams. Big thanks to Alex Williams, the composer of this track. And then who else, Noel? How do we want to reference Jonathan Strickland today?
Oh, geez. What did you say earlier, Max? He's like the Grimace of the ridiculous universe. He's a human taste bud.
The circus peanut of our hearts, perhaps?
I don't hate a circus peanut.
No, you don't. I mean, because it's like a marshmallow base.
It's the little marshmallow. You know what I really like, guys? My favorite candy of all? Various gummies. Specifically the ones that have that are shaped like animals and have little marshmallowy tummies, like the gummy sharks or gummy frogs.
I love a good gummy, and love it so much, fellow ridiculous historians, that you have tuned in with us. Please join us later this week when we dive into part two of Strange Halloween Candy. I don't even want to call it awful. You know,
we don't want to get it. Oh, yeah. Strange is good. Yeah. And we'll see you next time, folks.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Avalon Waterways. Ben, are you in major need of a vacation right now?
Noel, you're a mind reader. I am, and aren't we all?
We are. While cruising remains popular, there's something big happening in the industry, and that is, my friend, smaller ships.
True story. The intimate ships of Avalon Waterways can go where the big ships can only dream, through winding passageways of rolling vineyards and castled hills into the heart of timeless cities and storybook villages.
That sounds like a delight. See how Avalon's smaller ships promise greater discoveries, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency, where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.